Blog Talk Radio.
Going into the corner, Gordie Howe goes in to fight for it. He and Ziegenkopf have it. Back to Walt, not in front. Here's Bobby Howe, shoots, scores! Bobby Howe!
Dudeau trying to make a play. Lemieux steals, and he's up against Raymond Bork and Adam Oates. Coming to the Bruins, they got around both men. Cutting for the net, he's in on goal. Hey! Charlton scores! What a goal!
Brunet carries in, rolling in front of him, and in a shot! Desjardins following the play, and he misses the short cut. Here he is again. Scores! Desjardins!
It is double waiting.
All right, hockey fans, you're listening to the hard-checking, kick-saving, sudden-death scoring NHL Breakdown. I'm your host, Scott Levy, joined as always by George Kurtz of RotoExperts.com, and we're bringing all the on- and off-ice action, as well as keeping you fans and you fantasy owners fully informed at the top of your respective leagues. When the regular season begins, George and I will bring back our regular feature, the Fantasy Reports, which is just as informative for you hockey fans as well as you fantasy owners. It includes the IR report, goalie report, waiver wire recommendations, and line updates every single show all year long. So join us for that as well as our regular features that we have. If you're just joining us and warming yourself up to the hockey season or prepping yourself for the fantasy hockey season, you might want to go back and check all of our content for the last 6 weeks. Starting on July 30th, George and I did team-by-team off-season looks, taking a look at the upcoming season as well as some fantasy value from each team around the NHL all through the month of August. Started our fantasy prep bonanza at the beginning of September, just wrapping up our position-by-position fantasy rankings, going a lot deeper than we've ever had before. We usually do top 20s. We were doing almost top 30s for every position, top 40 for centers because it's such a deep position. And we're sort of now up to keepers, sleepers, and maybe even some players to avoid. That might be a little bit of a dramatic way of saying it. Maybe just players George and I have red flags on our sort of watching out that we're sort of worried some of you guys out there and gals out there might be taking a little too high or tempted to take a little too high in your draft. That's all that we'll be focusing on today. So, George, I want to start off today talking about keepers. We're not going to spend all that long on it, and this might even be a little bit some basic questions, but, you know, you never know who's listening. I always like to give reminders. You know, as commissioner of my league, I feel like I'm giving some very basic reminders every year when we start up again. But every single year, there's a guy who says, or a gal in my league, who says, I forgot we have blocks as a category. Well, check your categories. Check your settings. That's something you always remind us, George, on a regular basis, you know, in terms of making decisions on your league. Be familiar with it. So even though these keeper questions might seem a little basic for some people, some of our listeners, I still think it's worthy to sort of throw them out there. And obviously, we don't know who your team is, so we can't sort of tell you, you know, unless you write us and give us, you know, your all these particulars of your leagues, your categories, and the players that you have on your roster. You know, it's a little hard for us to speculate on who your best keepers will be. So these are more generalized questions, you know, and I'm sort of wondering if you have any specific guidelines. Is it just best player available, I mean, you know, overall, or is it a little bit more, you know, to that? Are you willing to take risk? Are you going to use a keeper, say, on an up-and-coming player who you feel is on the verge of breaking out, you know, that kind of guy? Or are you sort of only using keepers on your sure things, the guys who basically are going to be get drafted in your 2 and 3 rounds? 4 rounds, that sort of thing, so is it a complicated thing, or is it sort of as obvious as it sounds, best player available? So George, keeper choices, what do you think? I guess one more caveat, is there a big difference in your attitude towards keepers if you're saying in a league that's keeping 3 guys as opposed to a league that's maybe keeping 7 guys on your roster? Is that a sort of determining factor for you where your strategy towards your keepers might change? Or, again, is it sort of all the same, best player available, don't play around here? George, keeper philosophy, what do you think?
Well, first of all, keeper leagues or dynasty leagues, for anybody who doesn't know the difference, a keeper league means you're keeping a certain amount of players. You mentioned 3, 7, 5, 10, whatever it is. That's a keeper league. A dynasty league means you're keeping every player. Okay, that's the difference between a keeper and a dynasty league. My favorite types of leagues are one or the other. I want some kind of players to be kept year to year. I think it adds more strategy to a league. I think it helps unbalance trades. What's something we all bitch about during the fantasy season? We want to veto that trade because it's a bad trade. Well, in keeper and dynasty leagues, there really are no bad trades. Because if they're playing for the future, they should be giving away players that can't help them now, but players that can help in the future. So I enjoy those kinds of leagues immensely. I just think it adds more strategy. It's more fun. I like the idea of having players year after year after year, even if it's just a limited keeper league, which a lot of us play in, where you're only allowed to keep a player for a certain amount of years, 3 years, 5 years, whatever it might be. So they are by far my favorite types of leagues in all sports, baseball, football, hockey. I enjoy keeper leagues. Now, when it comes to determining who your keeper should be, it really doesn't matter how many you're keeping. I guess if you're keeping 7, 8, 9, which is unusual, but it does happen, you could take more chances. You can with guys who aren't proven. But generally, it comes down to you have two choices here. Either you're keeping your best players, period. I don't care where I drafted them. I'm keeping my best players. I want the most points. Or you're going for value. A lesser player, but who's drafted 10 rounds later. Generally, when it comes to me, I am the value person. If I have, don't get me wrong, if I have Connor McDavid in round 4, that's not great, but it's only a 3-round value. It's value, but not great value. Let's say round 3, 2-round value. I'm probably still keeping Connor McDavid. He's too good. But with normal players, if you have a player whose ADP says he's going to be drafted in round 2, and you have him keepable in round 4, not great value there. Plus, you got a chance to get him back in round 2. When it's your turn to draft. So do you really want to keep that player over somebody who maybe his ADP says he's going in round 4, and you have him in round 14? That to me is an easy choice. I'm keeping the round 14 player. I'll take that 10-round value, and I'll still take my chance that I can get the other player or a player just like him in round 4, in round 2 when I go again. But that's what you're going to have to wrestle with. Because generally your best players, unless you got a guy who is, a rookie or a guy who came out of the woodwork and no one really saw, they're all going in the first couple of rounds. So it's not a whole lot of value there. Generally you may be getting no value. You're keeping a guy in round 3, that's where he's going to get drafted anyway. So you're just keeping the best player. You want the most points. I get it. I do. But generally the way I look at it is, I'd rather keep that player in round 14. Assuming that player's a decent player, I'm not keeping schlop in round 14. I'm not keeping crap. That doesn't make any sense. But if it's a useful player in round 14, I'd rather have him my fourth-round pick than keep that guy in the fourth round. I feel like I'm getting 2-for-1 there. That's generally my philosophy there. And one thing I think people get in trouble with, I've seen this in a lot of drafts. Especially if you're – this is the one thing where 3 keepers and, as you said, 7 keepers, there is a difference here. While I'm drafting, if I can only keep 3 players – I'm not going to go flip out in a 20-round draft. I'm in round 18, 19, 20 and take every rookie I can find and eat up my bench spots and have to keep these guys now for 3 years hoping that they're going to pay off. You see this over and over again. Especially really in baseball, we see this a lot. But in hockey, it's a similar sport as far as how the day-to-day operations work. You take these guys, they're going to start off in the AHL, wherever they're going to start, or even junior, which means you're already eating year one. Year two, even if they make the team – they're probably not going to hit it big. You're keeping a guy for 2 years just to try and hit it big in year 3. Am I right? That's silly. You're hurting yourself now. I want to win now. I'll worry about the future in the future. I want to win now. Now, I don't mind taking one shot, one dartboard throw, but I've seen guys take 3, 4. They'll keep taking these guys and hoping, and then they wonder why during the regular season they have to release these guys for lesser players because injuries added up. They have no bench spots left. And that doesn't make any sense. So you're hurting your team. So I've never really understood that. I play to win now. I worry about the future in the future. Now, this would all change, of course, if we're talking about a dynasty league, where maybe, a dynasty league, you come into the season, well, my team sucks, and you know it. No, it's not. We've all had that. I've had that. You're in a rebuilding year. Then your draft is completely different. You are taking lesser players. Could even be a heavy keeper league. I play in a keeper league in baseball and hockey, for that matter, where we're keeping, I think, 15 to 18 players. Technically, it's not a dynasty league. There is a draft of more than just rookies. So it isn't. But I'll come in knowing, I'm not going to win this year. I know it. So even before the draft, I'm trading away players that I know can't help me, older veterans that someone will give me draft picks for, younger players. And during the draft, yes, in that kind of league, I will take a lot of dartboard throws because I'm not playing to win this year. I know I'm not. In that case, you're fine to do that. But if you think you have a legitimate shot at to win this year, then go to win this year. I've said this many times. Flags fly forever. In dynasty leagues and even heavy keeper leagues, those leagues don't last forever. For all the league you're playing in this year won't be around next year. And I say this as someone who plays in industry leagues with other people that everybody knows the names, but those leagues still dissolve because a couple of teams, you know, they were terrible. They didn't want to come back. And it's annoying about a dynasty league. Guys don't want to go through the rebuilding process. It definitely pisses me off. That's the idea. Rebuild your team. Don't be afraid to do it. You know, I get a heavy industry football league, 32 teams, two 16-team conferences. I had to rebuild for 2 years. And it's one of the best things I've done because now the last 2 years, although I haven't won, I've lost a championship game for the past 2 years, but I've rebuilt my team to where it's competitive. You know, it shows what you can do. You know, you have to make those trades, make those moves. So, but like I said, I've been in other leagues where guys who are in the same situation, more, two, three, they drop out, and then the league folds. Always play to win this year unless you know, hey, it's just not going to happen.
It's such a great perspective on keepers and the way of sort of going about it there, George. And I just got to tell you, you know, I've actually never been in a dynasty league. As many leagues and hockey leagues that I've played in and dabbling in a few industry leagues here and there, I've never been in a dynasty league myself. And that's the exact thing I would love to sort of get myself into because that I love that challenge. I love that idea of, okay, obviously I'm trying to win all the time, but to the point that you just made of you're going to have a down year or two. How do you rebuild? I love that sort of strategy in a league. That's why I sort of tend to sort of gravitate in all fantasy sports that I play, more challenging leagues that have some of these more sort of advanced rules and advanced strategies. And that's one thing I sort of want to clear up because I think a lot of our casual listeners might not quite get some of what you're saying just because in more basic leagues that, you know, that have keepers, you know, a league that maybe might be newer or just be a lower competitive level, it might not have that wrinkle that you were referring to where you're sort of losing the round in the draft that you are keeping a player from, which is one of the things, and honestly, George, for me, I was not introduced that to that idea until I joined the league, your league that I'm in with you, where, okay, I drafted, you know, Hellebuck in the 17th round, and so if I decide to keep him, I lose my 17th round pick rather than just sort of a general, you know, some basic leagues like my league that I commissioner in, which is in Yahoo and doesn't sort of, you know, give you this, unless you do an offline draft, it doesn't really give you that option. You choose your keepers for the 18th or the 19th round. That's when they'll run. Or you set them for the first three rounds and they'll run automatically that way and then you'll start in round four. So they not all people will have that that option to sort of like or to use that extra level of strategy, which, again, I absolutely love. It's sort of one of my favorite – well, I wouldn't say new because I've been in the league with you for like a good 7 years now. You know, but it's one of the kind of rules I actually tried to bring to my league. It's need to figure it out. My league that I'm commissioner in is in Yahoo. Doesn't really quite – unless I do the draft offline – doesn't have that sort of option to facilitate that. And I do look at Yahoo leagues a lot. Again, as I said earlier when we're doing our position rankings, just because the NHL, NHL.com, NHL sort of, you know, supports Yahoo. So I tend to gravitate to a lot of sort of things that they do just because of our listeners, I think, are more than likely going to be listening to them, even though our better and better sites popping up every year, which I do encourage you to explore. I myself am doing sort of the same thing there. But, yeah, that's actually a strategy. Like I said, I absolutely love that. Sort of my favorite new wrinkle. I mean, I've already told people who are not in the league that with me and you, George, you know, and you could probably figure this out pretty easily. I might have even said it to you off air. You know, I already know. I'm keeping Hellebuck and Mike Smith. And some people listening out there would be like, Mike Smith as a keeper? But I traded for him from you, George, as you well know, from last season. He's the 20th round pick. Okay, maybe he's an average number two goaltender, but I'm getting that value in the 20th round. I gave up my first and third round pick for this year's draft, which is really debilitating. I think we can all agree. But I was going for the championship, which you won. I came in second. But one of the reasons why I was willing to do it, George, is because I do have Hellebuck in the 17th round. So I'm getting second or third round value in the 17th round, which sort of takes the bite out of missing that first and third round that I traded away. You know, so great, like I said, George, you know, great tips and points out there. And I do highly encourage everybody out there to sort of adopt that rule of the, you know, the keeper that you're keeping, you lose that round rather than that sort of blanket thing where you're running the keepers at the beginning or the end of your draft. Like George said, it adds so much more fun strategy to the whole process. All right, George, Let's sink our teeth into sleepers, which can kind of be a little bit of a tricky subject, you know, for a lot of people out there. Now, we're going to go position by position, and generally speaking, I'm hoping you have at least two or three, if not four, but I'm looking for a couple, two or three names for you from each position, with the exception of goaltender, because goaltender is only so deep. And, you know, let's be honest, defense is might be a little bit harder to sort of do as well. So, yeah, we're focusing a little bit more on the forward positions. So I'm going to start with center because I can't imagine there's got to be a sleeper out there or two. But, George, if, you know, you're looking for a sleeper towards the latter part of your draft, even though I do want you to give me a couple of names, I'm just wondering if center is a position you're even going to focus on to pluck a potential sleeper from, just because of how deep the position is. I mean, so does it make sense to have that one of your places of forward, one of your places of focus, if you're looking for sleepers at the end of your draft because of the depth of that position? So I'm curious of that question, but even if the question is, yes, I wouldn't bother with that, which I'm going to say right now, that's what I expect your answer to be, that you're not going to think it's worth it. You know, what name or two might pop out as a possible potential good sleeper, even if that is your attitude? So center to the position, George, what do you think of the question I'm throwing out there, and do you have any names that you particularly like at the end of your draft or latter part of your draft to pluck a sleeper? George?
Well, you said it there. There are no sleepers at center. It's too deep. There are players. I'm looking at a draft list. Now, I'm not going to name the site because I think it's a terrible list, actually. But I'm looking at a rankings list right now, and I'm going into the 80s here at center, not overall, at center. And I'm looking at Paul Stastny's ranked 80. You know, Spezza, 77. Matthew Perreault, 76. I mean, these are all names. Tyler Johnson, 67. Jonathan Drouin, 65. Technically, at 65 and above and below, these aren't sleepers. These are guys who are dead, that no one's drafting. And, you know, they'd be owned in less than 5% of leagues, and that's not true. They'll be owned in more. Especially Stastny, that's surprising to me. So I think this is just a bad list. But that also lets you know, once again, center is incredibly deep. Now, if you want me to name somebody who won't be on too many people's lips, a guy who he just needs to stay healthy. Back-to-back years, he's pretty much lost due to injury. St. Louis, Robbie Fabry. I'd like to see if he can stay healthy. He will qualify. He might qualify at wing in some leagues, too. Could qualify at both. But he's a player I'd like to see stay healthy and see what he can do. He's a guy I'm certainly interested in. Whether he can or he can't, you know, I don't know. You know, you want to go closer to home? Well, you know what? Brock Nelson's going to be centering the Islanders' second line. You know, maybe he scores 25 goals. I don't think he does. But, once again, that's a name there. And he's on this list. He's 87. You know, I just let you know, this center is just crazy deep. Brian Little, 66. I can go on and on here with centers who are so low on the rankings list because of the position and, of course, how deep it is. So you don't need to go this low. You just don't, which is also why, as you were sort of hinting at, I don't know if I'm taking a backup center because I know, especially if I only have 3 to 5 bench spots. You know, generally, you're going to want to have, let's say you have 5. Most leagues have 5. You're going to have a backup goalie. So that's 4. You know, you're going to want at least 3 wings, and then you got 1. Is it a defenseman or is it a center? It's really what it comes down to there. You know, best player overall, whatever it might be. But with the depth of center here, and in most leagues you only start 2, maybe you want to say 3 in a flex, so that's only, you only start in 30 centers. You know, that means even if every team in your league grabs 1 backup, now it's at 40. I just named 3 players that are well below 40 you can get for free, just on the waiver wire during the week. Okay, I'll pick them up. So why would you even take a backup center? I go through this over and over again with myself. Why would you even take a backup center? Now, you look in the league you and I play in, which although the point scoring is different, we're a deeper league. We start 3 centers. And now this year, the rule you put in that got voted in, we instead of a 6th forward wing, we're starting making it a flex where you can start a center or a wing. So now you could start 4 in our league. It's an 11-person league. But even that's only starting 44 then. If everybody in that flex spot used a center, we're using 44 now. If everybody picks up 1 extra wing, 55. And that's in a crazy league, a deep league where we're starting 3 to 4. You know, so it just shows you no matter how your league is set up, center is not going to be a position of need. Yes, you want the great ones, of course. But after that, you can always find somebody at center. Always. I'm not obviously you can't find all stars, but you're not going to find some schlep who is a third, fourth line winger who's never going to play. You'll be able to find a center who's at least on the second power play unit.
Yeah, you know, that, I mean, that sums it up really perfectly. So any guys that I sort of have listed center are guys that are generally dual position guys. So I would sort of end up listing them in the winger position. George Fabrie is a guy that both of us individually have been really anxious to see and a bit high on. And he is at the very top of my list at the left wings because I know in Yahoo he is listed at the left wing as well as a center. So I am 1,000% on board with that. If he can stay healthy, I expect him to be in the top six, and I'm eager to see what he can do if he can stay on the ice. The only guy who sort of, intrigues me a little bit, but again, he sort of falls into that category that you sort of described, like I can probably find somebody as good as him. But having said that, I am a little bit intrigued with Bo Horvat. 22 goals, 22 assists in 64 games last year on the pace of 28-28. Had 10 power play goals last year, trending up on his shots. So if shots, is a category for you, you know, he's going to push at least 200 shots. This coming year. He's also put up some, a decent amount of hits, but that's, I always just sort of throw that in there as a tidbit since I know it's increasing popularity in category. But outside of that, Broussard is actually a guy I'm intrigued with. I wouldn't draft him. I would definitely put him on my watch list because I do think he's going to be on the third line with Kessel and maybe Sprong. And that is an intriguing line if it does end up being that third line on a regular basis. If Sprong plays well, I actually think he has some upward mobility. He almost made my right wing, sleeper Sprong, because I think he has upward mobility. In fact, if he plays well, he can end up sort of being, in the top two lines on the wing with Malkin or Crosby, which obviously would help his, his value quite a lot. But obviously, I'm seeping into wings here. But Bo Horvat, I find particularly intriguing. And if I were to really wait very late on wingers, or if I was just getting that bench guy, and Horvat really would start being that number four center more than likely. But he's a guy not to sleep on. So I definitely highly encourage to take him late in a draft, but more likely putting him on your watch list if you have an injury and need to pick somebody up. He'd sort of be near the top of my list. But, completely agreeing with you, George, and the fact that I probably wouldn't be using a sleeper pick to focus at center. He is one guy, Horvat, who does particularly intrigue me quite a lot. Before I switch over to ask you about wings, which obviously I think will be the thrust of and the main focus of both of our sleeper lists here that we're talking about today, I do want to ask you a question of, and again, I feel like this is a little bit of a basic question, but for casual listeners or just as a reminder to some listeners, I think it's a worthy question of when we're talking sleepers, George, when are you going to start taking those risks on that quote-unquote sleeper kind of guy? Now, if you're looking at 10-team league, that's sort of a standard type of or the closest to standard as you're going to get, 15 or 16 size roster, 10-team league. When are you thinking of getting your sleepers? I imagine it's not, ninth round, tenth round. That'd be way too early, right? So is it just the last two rounds, three rounds that you're looking at? Or, so where are you looking to target that? And just for, to expand the idea, if you're in a deeper league, where it's maybe 12 teams, but more importantly rounds, where you're just having 18 or 20 rounds, again, it's just the same concept where, okay, I'm a 20-round draft, 18th, 19th, 20th round, I'm looking at at sleepers, or are you taking risks like that earlier, 14th or 15th round? So just ballpark it for us to give us some idea of when you think is the smart play to look to target picking a sleeper. George?
Well, if you want to make a fantasy analyst cringe, asking where someone should be drafted is the exact way to do it because there's no right answer. There's a million different answers depending on what league you're playing in, where you're playing. A perfect example is this. If you have a sleeper, let's say you have a sleeper on the Las Vegas Golden Knights. Well, we're in a New York league. That's good. He'll go later. You're playing in Vegas or out west. Guess what? He's going earlier because there'll be fans of the team in that league. They know the player. That's also another big thing, knowing who, your league. You know, do they like players? How competitive is your league? Is it a bunch of novices where no one knows the sleepers at all? Hell, I mean, third or second line players could be sleepers in that sort of league. Or you're playing in a league that people know what they're doing, where they've done their studying, where they know everybody. Well, then those players aren't sleepers. In football, and really in baseball also, there are no sleepers anymore. If you're doing any kind of homework, I mean, that's all we do. We talk about it. My job is pretty much to talk about sleepers all through the offseason. And we point these players out over and over again. Hockey, not as much. Obviously, it's not as popular as baseball and football. So you will get some guys who slip through the cracks because there isn't as much information out there. But in the amateur sports, there are no such things. There just are no such things as sleepers. So when you should take somebody, really, it's impossible. Yes, technically, if it's a true sleeper, you should be able to get him if you're in a 20-round draft or whatever round draft in the last couple of rounds, within the last five rounds. That's really what you're looking for. You know, that's – once again, that assumes that the player is a true sleeper. What you think is a sleeper, I may not think is a sleeper. You know, when we've been talking about this guy for months now. We all know about him. Anybody on the first top two lines really isn't a sleeper. You know, he's playing on a top power play unit. He's certainly not a sleeper. Playing with second power play unit, yeah, he could be a sleeper. But you have to really ask yourself that question, is this player a true sleeper? Now, I just mentioned when he did centers about Bo Horvat was on my list as well. I should have said him. He was number 60, 62 on this list I'm looking at. It's incredible. But what I was trying to say is in centers there will be no sleepers. There are so many good players. Wings, you'll find guys who are sleepers. But, you know, since we play in deeper leagues, what might be a sleeper to somebody, depending on how many players you're picking, it's not a sleeper to me because I play in these leagues. So these guys are getting drafted, but I, you know, sort of take yourself back to a 10-team league. In a 10-team league, are there really any sleepers? You're not taking very many people. Unless you're, what I'm trying to say is you're most likely in a shallow league, a very shallow league. In a 10-team league, should you even be taking chances on sleepers? You don't need to. You can get more established players. So when I say the last five rounds in a 10-team league, all of a sudden that might be the last two rounds for me. I'm not wasting any kind of valuable draft resources on a sleeper. Don't need to. 10-team league. See, I'm not drafting many players in the first place. Why would I want to take somebody who may or may not pay off? Just grab the best players available, which is generally how I approach most drafts, best player available. Because you're going to have injuries. It's hockey, physical sport. You're going to have injuries. You have to be a sleeper who may or may not pay off. I have no problem with one. Like I said, generally the last two rounds of a draft in any draft are dartboard throws. You want to try and hit the home run. But in 10-team leagues, do you really need to do that? When I say that, I'm really gearing it more towards 12-team leagues, deeper leagues where more players are gone, where there aren't established veterans out there. There aren't established guys. You can look at the back. You can look online and see their career, and you know what they're going to score. 28 goals every year, that's what he does, and you know that. So I'd be very careful. So many fantasy owners get caught up in trying to hit the lottery. They really do. They like the idea. Oh, you know, if I take this guy, he's second line, top six forward, barely going to play a little bit. 40 seconds of power play time. Yeah, he scores 27 goals every year, but there's no upside. That could be very well true for a lot of players, but you know that there's value in 27 goals. That sleeper you're trying to hit, what's his upside? I mean, really, what's his upside? Even if he makes the team, is he playing on the top two lines? Is he going to get top power play in minutes? You know, you got to be very careful when you start taking these sleepers. I have no problem taking anybody in the last couple of rounds, but I think you said the first 10 rounds, it's not even a thought, unless you've got a Connor McDavid type of player. That's different here. You know, a guy who's never played, but that's not a sleeper. We all know about him. First 10 rounds, really, you need to pick your best players. You know, once again, we'll say a 20-round draft. So that's the first half of your draft. The next quarter of your draft, so that's rounds 11 to 15, I might look at a player who could be considered a sleeper or two. I might. But I'm still probably not taking him over more established players. I want to have the foundation of my team set up. I want to be covered in case of injuries. Generally, when I go as far as, and generally with sleepers, we're talking about our reserves. So if I have five reserves, and let's say we are splitting left wings or right wings. So as my five reserves, I write next to my reserve players, I write reserve, and then at the end I write left wing, right wing, center, D, goalie. I probably want one of each. In a perfect world, that's what I'm going for. So when I take my reserve, I don't just put them in the next slot and go, okay, I got my backup right wing. I got my backup left wing. I want to have a backup in each position, but I'm also very careful to notice, A, I don't want to take a pure backup over a better player. I want to make sure I take the best player. If that means I have two left wings, fine. I'll deal with it. You know, trades can always be made. I'll make adjustments during the season. I will have a list of players. I don't know if I would call these sleepers, but on most of my drafts, I highlight players who I've noticed that I like and that are not being drafted or being drafted very late and are very low on whatever cheat sheet I'm using. You know, generally when I do a draft, I don't use my own cheat sheet. I use the cheat sheet. I know what players I want. I've done so many of these drafts, I don't have to use my own. But like I said, in this list, Bo Horvat, 62, I'll highlight his name so I don't forget about him. That's this way I'm not only looking at the top 30 players. You know, and Bo Horvat, I'll know. Wow, his ADP says he's going whatever, you know, whatever round he's going in. I don't need to take him early. I don't think Bo Horvat's a sleeper. But according to his draft ranking, he is. So I can wait forever. And that's more important to me than sleepers. Where is someone's ADP? Where can I draft him? Can I wait? And that's how I approach my draft. It's really a very – it's not a very hard thing to do. It's very simple. But that's how I go about things. Highlight players are low on drafters, which means technically, yes, they are sleepers. But in my mind, they're not. I said the Bo Horvats of the world, Tyler Johns. These are guys – Jonathan Druin. These are established players, but fantasy owners are treating them like sleepers. So I can wait forever. And those will be the guys I'll look at late in my draft. I sort of get the best of both worlds there. Technically, it's still, they're still sleepers, but they're all veterans too. Technically, a veteran is anybody who's played more than 1 year. But three or four years. They have 3 or 4 years in the league. I know they're established. I know they'll do something. They'll give me something. I generally, in the draft, I stay – I don't want to be that player, as I said earlier, that takes 3 or 4 sleepers. Those are always going to be the first guys you release when you have injuries anyway. And now you're taking a lesser player. You could have drafted a better player in round 17 than these sleepers who you're getting rid of once you had a couple of wings go down. It's I don't want to get caught up in the lottery picks, and too many fantasy owners do.
George, first of all, I know you hate that type of question, and I phrased it the way I did just because it's the common way people are talking about it. But I really loved everything that you just said, and especially the perspective that you put it in. You know, and like one of the things I want to key on of what you said is that idea of, you know, what we're sort of calling keepers. I don't really think of keepers either, because I am sort of thinking of that you know, sort of veteran player who's a little bit of a soundness that people forgot about because they had one bad season or one injury season, you know, so their names dropped and people forget about them, just like people over, you know, to kind of push guys who had a really great year last year, but they forgot for the 3 or 4 years before that were very average, and they sort of end up getting drafted like 2, 3, 4 rounds higher than they should based on what you know that they can give you. You know, so I really sort of love the perspective on that. And a lot of my list here, George, I was sort of on the fence about because some of these guys are established players that we do know of, but I feel like they're sort of, you know, falling into this sort of sleeper type of category in the last third of your draft or so because people have forgotten about them or are selling on them thinking that they're sort of in steep decline one way or another. And I love the point that you made about, again, knowing your league and how competitive your league is. Because a lot of these guys that come up on lists, the sleeper lists, or come in the category that we're talking about, the league that I commission, it's a very competitive 12-team league. It's like the league with me and you, George, where we're starting basically three lines, having at least three centers and at least, six wingers, whether it's designated left or right or just the winger category, you know. So a lot of these guys that we're talking about today are getting plucked in the 13th or 14th round because a lot of these guys in my league and gals in my league, they know their stuff. And they know that, hey, if I wait for that guy in that last three rounds, they're not going to be there. So they strategically, you know, pluck, you know, these guys maybe a little bit earlier than the classic late in the last couple of rounds time that you're looking to pick these guys up. So really fantastic, you know, tidbits of information for you on the perspective that you should take on these sleepers. But let's get back to the positions and some of these guys that we do know and do like for this, quote-unquote, using the term loosely now, of sleepers. Left wing, as I said, George, I had Fabry in my left wing category just because I'm not going to take a sleeper as my center more than likely. So since I know he has dual position in most leagues, and I could probably get him as a left wing, he's on the top of the left wing board for me. But who else out there do you have who you find intriguing in this type of player, in this category, loosely using the term sleeper, for your left wings? Who jumps out of you as guys that you're sort of liking to pick for a sleeper left wing? George?
Yeah, I said when it comes to my drafting, yeah, I think people also need to understand what the term sleeper is. Sleeper is not that player that, oh my God, no one's ever drafting in their life. It's really, it's a player who's being drafted in a very small percentage of leagues. So, and it's very dangerous because, like I said, I see it so often. Listen, I'm glad when I play in leagues, when people do what they do and they take this player, I'm like, what the hell were you doing? Why were you even thinking about drafting such and such a player? What, because you like the name? I mean, the first thing I look for in a player is going to be, well, what line's he on? You know, left line, top line, second line, third line. There are very few third line players I want. Yeah, but let's say there is. And you mentioned the third line of Pittsburgh. That's something that does stand out because they, you know, you got Kessels on that line. So you got a player, a couple of players who could be valuable. But the first thing I'm looking at, okay, let's say I can live with a third line player. It won't have as many minutes. Next thing I look at, power play time. I'm assuming you're not on a top power play, so that means you're on a third power play, second power play unit. What does that unit look like? You know, can it be a unit that scores goals? And I don't know. But let's say, once again, both are positive. So players I might look at. Patrick Marleau is a player lowerly ranked. I'm looking at players that are outside the top 30 here as far as rankings are concerned. Patrick Marleau is the players he's going to play with. He'll be on the top line or second line, but you know he's playing with Matthews or Tavares. That's another thing I'm looking at. Can you get a player that no one's heard of? This is what everyone does who's ever played McDavid and Crosby, right? For years, we've all been doing this. Or Ovechkin, for that matter. Who's on that line that no one's heard of? We'll take that player. You know, because he's going to score, as you like to say, you can't escape, but you score 10 goals with these players. I get the joke, I get the analogy, and that's what we're looking at here. I've mentioned Brandon Saad. You know, I'm going to go down with the ship with this guy probably again. I don't know why he's like kryptonite to me. So I'll probably go down with him. If Anthony Beauvillier stays with Matthew Barzal on the top line, I think he's an intriguing pick. You know, my only problem is he could send him a second line if the Islanders don't like Brock Nelson there. So he's a guy that I will look at. Get him lower in the draft. Islanders, even though you and I play in the New York League, some Islanders will go that shouldn't. Islanders generally are going to fall in the draft, and most drafts because, well, no one expects much from them. And I can't say I argue with that. Milan Lucic with Edmonton is another guy that comes to mind. You already said Robbie Fabry, so I'm not going to bring him up. Zach Parise on this list is 47, and I get it. But he'll be gone because he's a name player. Max Domi might be somebody I give a shot with at Montreal. The guy who has talent, maybe just needed a change of scenery. Jake DeBrusque of Boston is another guy I kind of like. These are lower-end guys I won't have. Out of all the players I mentioned, I'll only have one. I'm not taking two and three of these guys. But there's a chance I'll have one of them, and they'll be a reserve for my roster. And then I'll be the guy, you know, look at, okay, could fill in here, fill in there. Like I said, generally you're only starting two. Since we separated, you're probably only starting two left wings and a flex or two. So at most, you only need to start three. And we're going into our 30s and 40s here. You should be able to pick up three stars before you get to this list.
A lot of guys that you have, George, I have as well on my left wing list. I really like Domi in particular. I like what you said about Brandon Saad in particular. I mean, you know, I think he is sort of primed for a big comeback season. I'm a little surprised. I mean, I get it. 18 goals, 35 points, majorly disappointing. I think most of us expected at least 50 goals and 25 goals and 50 points from him and didn't get it. But to me, it really feels like an aberration. You know, if you look at his numbers that he put up, you know, in the prior 4 years, he's averaging 220, shots, per season, the last four seasons. 11% is his, shooting average in his career, which is actually dragged down by 7.6% that he had last year. So, you know, if he gets his average 220 shots, that's going to be, 24 goals. Kind of automatically, I expect him to improve on that. So I sort of have Saad targeted once again, as I've had him in the past, as probably 27 goals. He's also averaged 6 game-winning goals a year the last 4 years. And again, he had 8 game-winning goals last year despite just 18 goals overall. So he's still getting a lot of key time, a lot of power play time, a lot of late in the game. We're behind or we're tied time. So I'm really on board with him being, having a nice bounce back season. I know here, and again, we're just playing the first, one or two preseason games. You know, so again, we're not really going all in on the line combinations that we're seeing, but I think we're all pretty confident he's going to be on that top two lines left wing. He was playing with Schmaltz and Kane on the second line. I think a lot of us have seen him play and maybe expected to end up with Taze on the top line. But either way, it's a good spot to be. So I'm all in on him. In terms of other guys that you didn't mention, Meyer in San Jose, even before the Carlson trade. I mean, I expect him to stick in the top six this year, and he had, I believe, 24 goals last year, playing in mostly third-line time. You know, so he is intriguing to me as well. And you know what? I know this is a very established player, you know, but I can see him legitimately dropping because of the injury issues and the drop-off in production that he's had the last 2 years. But I'm telling you, George, if Zach Parise falls into the bottom third of a draft, if he is in round 13, 14, and later, I am all over that. I think there's a very legitimate argument to being worried about picking him higher than that. I think that, you know, he does have that sort of challenge, you know, in terms of staying away from, because he's got that name recognition that we always talk about, and people sort of like, especially when they're in the middle of a draft and maybe they're sort of sputtering a little bit, they go for the name recognition. So I have a feeling he's not going to be there. I think he should, you know, should be legitimately falling there, because there are enough legitimate questions. When we're talking about left wings, you know, position rankings last week, I had sort of said, hey, you know, as sort of a fourth left wing, if I'm you know, getting four left wings for my team, I'm all over him, because I love what he did the last 2 months when he was finally healthy again and playing for Boudreaux, finally healthy, going to be on the top two lines. I like that possibility, but I'm also not, you know, I think I'm going to get ninth or tenth round value out of him at the end of the year, but I'm not pulling the trigger on him in the ninth or tenth round because I just don't trust him, because of all the issues of the last couple of years. But, you know, and again, because of the type of player he is and that we know him, I feel weird even sort of suggesting him as this quote-unquote sleeper. But in more sort of the description you gave us a little bit earlier, George, I think he sort of is a perfect guy to target if he does fall, because and nobody sort of takes the bait of the name value. All right, George, let's move it over to right wings. And right wings, I know I had a lot more trouble than left wings. I thought left wing was sort of replete with guys. I mean, I could sort of name another couple of guys. Actually, there was one other guy that I sort of liked to throw out there that I did skip over, which was Mantha. I mean, Detroit's going to be a complete train wreck, but they're obviously not going to be good. I don't expect them to make the playoffs. But especially with all the turnover that they have, the veterans, Zetterberg's not being there. I mean, if Larkin and Mantha weren't solidified as going to be on a top line before that, they certainly are now. He had 24 goals, 24 assists last year. I think he's only going to get better. I mean, I don't think he's going to be a 40-40 guy in any stretch of the imagination, but I think he is going to start pushing being a 30-30 guy. And again, if you're talking sort of late in your teens, he's still there. I think he is a really good potential guy. I think he's going to break 200 shots on goal. He had 9 power play goals last year, you know, so I think he's only going to get more of that time this year. So I do think, again, talking about this category of player, he might be an interesting guy as well. All right, George, now let's go over to the right wings. Who in the right wing category do you find particularly intriguing talking about this kind of player? George?
I thought there are plenty of right wings available, too, that you can find late that, once again, depending on your definition, could be considered sleepers. I like Tyler Toffoli. You're playing with Jeff Carter all season. Sometimes we forget that guys had bad numbers the year before because somebody might have been hurt. A player on their line might have been hurt their value. Jeff Carter was out until February last year, came back scoring goals again. I think that helps Toffoli as well. I pretty much like everybody on Florida. Anyway, I think his team's going to have a big effect this season. Bukes that I like, Zucker. Corey Perry is in the same exact category as Parise. I think you put it perfectly. These are not players I'm looking to grab, but they are the player where when someone's stumbling late in the draft, they're going through their pages, they can't find anybody, you know, and they're I don't want to say announced, but not maybe not as adept at drafting as some other people, you know. Who are they going to pick? They're going to pick the name player. You know, Zach Parise, everybody knows Zach Parise. Corey Perry, everybody knows Corey Perry. So he gets selected. You know, whether or not he should at that point or shouldn't. Generally, I think these guys are going to go, you said around 13, 14. I think they'll go more around 9, 10 because of what we talked about. When someone's just stumbling, they're going to take the name play because they'll feel safe. they'll just feel safe. So, but Perry is somebody, like I said, if he was there around 13, 14, sure, I'd be all over him too. Palmieri, I already mentioned him when we talked about right wings. He's someone I like. Alex Tuch, I do like as well for Las Vegas. So I think there'll be some regression there for the Vegas as a team. Andres Casse with Anaheim, Tyler Johnson. I am not taking Natushkin. I'd gone down with a ship with him for a couple of years, too, back when he was originally in the NHL. Not doing it again. Zuccarello is somebody I don't mind. Nick Foligno, he has center eligibility, too. Josh Bailey, interesting for the Islanders. I'm down on the Islanders. I think they're going to have a very tough offensive season this year without John Tavares. All these players moving up pretty much a level here, and no Tavares to protect you. Bailey loses Tavares. I'm not going to play with him. Not touching him. Alexander Steen. I take him, yes. I know full well he's going to get hurt. He's not playing anywhere near 82 games. But you know what? When he plays, he scores goals. So he's a guy, once again, as long as I'm not relying on him to start for me, I'm okay with him being a backup. When he gets hurt, I put him on IR, I'll take somebody else. But when he plays, he scores. And as long as, like I said, as long as I'm not relying on him to start, I'm good with that.
Oh, wow. You know what? You sort of blew me away a little bit with some of your names here. Zucker, the only reason why I wouldn't have on my list is because he was at the very tail end of my top 30 list, because I like Zucker a lot. I'm a little wary of him quite matching what he did last year, but I don't think he's going to fall that short of it. But I definitely think he could sort of fall through the cracks and be that guy that you're implying. My list isn't nearly as long, but I love a couple of guys that I have on it, starting first and foremost with Elias Lindholm. Again, I'm not buying totally into the line combinations we've seen in one or two preseason games, but Lindholm, just like I predicted, even after James Neal landed there, I said, hey, you know what, James Neal landed there. Even Gaudreau himself said, hey, I hope James Neal's on my line, which sort of shook my confidence a little bit. But Elias Lindholm, I think, has been targeted for that right wing spot on the top line. He's been playing there, and I saw glimpses of the preseason game, and I thought he looked really good. I think it makes a lot more sense to keep James Neal on the second line with Tkachuk and Backstrom. I think it evens out the scoring there. So it just logically made sense here. If you're having your draft in another week or two and this combination stays, I am all in on Lindholm. And again, this is not saying that he's going to be a 74 player and suddenly score 30 goals, but he's playing with Monahan and Gaudreau, two players who have shown that they can put up good numbers the last 3-4 years together. I like the way he looked in the brief bits that I saw. I'm all over him when you're talking about a player in this kind of category here. Sam Reinhart, even though Buffalo is still going to be, not so great, I think they're on the right path. Reinhart really sort of convinced me a little bit, enough to take him in this sort of late in the draft. I have a little bit of confidence that you can replicate what you finally seem to truly find your game in the second half of last year. The beginning of last year was an ugly, ugly struggle that you thought, oh, wow, oh, my God, he might not be in the NHL next year. I mean, that's an exaggeration, maybe a big exaggeration, but he looked bad. And he found his game in the second half of last year, put up a lot of good points. I think he could be not just a nice sleeper guy, but a breakout guy this year. Case Kase in Anaheim. I haven't seen too many good line combinations from Anaheim yet, and I haven't been able to watch them play yet in any preseason or scrimmage games kind of thing, and streaming online or anything. But I think he's got a chance to just replace Perry outright on the top line. And even if he doesn't, he showed some pretty good chemistry with Henrik last year. And it's going to be Henrik and him, or at least Henrik's going to be centering the second line, because even if Kessler does come back, which it seems almost guaranteed he's not going to start the season with Anaheim, but even if he is, he's just with his injury situation and easing him back to the lineup, Kessler is going to basically be playing third line minutes, when he first comes back. And probably even focus on even more on the defensive than the offensive there. So I think he is a particularly interesting guy. And one other guy, and I'm not quite as all in on this, but I'm intrigued by it. Butch Nevich of the New York Rangers, most likely going to be on that top line with Zibanejad and Kreider. Even if he's not, he's going to be in that top six. And I think this is sort of a make or break year to see if he truly has top six ability. you know, or at least production. I mean, he's shown that he has the talent for that, but he hasn't quite produced that that just yet. I do think some of the reason was the way sort of, you know, Alain Vigneault sort of jerked him around, you know, the lineup. He made one mistake on the top line, and he found himself on fourth line for 2 weeks. You know, so just sort of that consistency that he's most likely going to get from Quinn in terms of, okay, let's see what you got this year. I find him intriguing, especially with those two guys, assuming Zibanejad can actually stay healthy for a whole season. So he is also a very intriguing late pick for me. All right, George, let's move to defense, which, you know, again, I think is a pretty hard category to even really, you know, delve into. But having said that, George, do you have any sleepers, you know, or interesting late draft picks at defense that you like a lot of guys that you think will be possibly lying around there?
Well, once again, defense is another category. I'm using it for category fillers. That's the way I look for that. My plus minus hits, blocks. I was looking for certain guys who slipped through the list. Now, if we're talking about defensemen, once again, it just happened to be out there late in drafts that you're like, wow, I'm surprised these guys aren't being drafted earlier. I mean, I'm going to look at outside the top 50, all right, because generally you're drafting four defensemen in the league. Once again, even at 10, that's top 40. You draft one, now it's 50 guys gone. So let's look at the guys who are at the top 50. Vlasic on San Jose, I know they just picked up Carlson. Still, though, he's a guy who I like what he can bring. And once again, category filler. Plus minus should be pretty good for Vlasic. So he's a guy I'm going to be interested in. Dion Phaneuf going to Los Angeles. I seen the revive him a little bit last year. Like the way he played with the Kings. Vatanen with the Devils. Someone's got to help out there. But the Devils, you know, Goligoski is a name guy, but not someone I'm targeting. Because once again, I think he's going to hurt me more than help me in those categories that I want to hit in. Zdeno Chara is probably someone I'm not going to give much love to either. But I do like Justin Schultz with Pittsburgh. Once again, point scores there. Could be the power play. It was magical 2 years ago, not so much last year. Needs to pick that up again. Mike Green on Detroit is being forgotten about. I don't know why. Because of the injuries last year, he probably can't play a full season again. True, but probably gets traded as well at some point for a much better team. Colin Miller with Las Vegas. Middle of part of last season, for a while, he was really good. He's got a very hard shot. Power play, but I think he can do some damage there. Eric Johnson, Colorado, another guy I like. Colorado, a young up-and-coming team. Not great. He's got Tyson Barry's there, the second-year player whose name escapes me, who's on my fantasy team. Samuel is there as well, whose guy I think is going to end up taking ice time away from him, but he's still someone I'm going to look at as far as can help me out. Olimata is another guy I seem to go down with the ship with, or a guy I believe in, still waiting for him to be that player that he has skill, just needs to put it together over a full season, but he's someone I will look at there as far as someone who can maybe take that next step. And you know what? I can't be intrigued by every Pittsburgh defenseman, but man, they paid a bunch for Jack Johnson, and I wonder what his role is going to be with that team.
That's sort of an interesting question, an out there question, and I totally understand where you're going with that. I can't pull the trigger on it. I just don't trust Jack Johnson enough. But you know what? I mean, not that I'm not being objective, but you know, taking a step back, I could see why you say that. I mean, just with the game that Pittsburgh plays and the fact that players tend to find a little bit more of their offense when they land in Pittsburgh. I can see why it's sort of the intriguing thing, especially since he does give solid hits and blocks numbers, so you have that to fall back on. As far as my list, man, George, you know, one of my favorite guys. And again, this is not saying I expect this guy to end up in the top 20 in defenseman scoring, not by a long shot, but a guy who I'd sort of mentioned a couple times in the last few months that I like as sort of a defenseman sleeper, a guy that I'm targeting as like my number four defenseman or number five defenseman. And I'm so glad he finally re-signed with the Winnipeg Jets, because it would have been awkward saying his name if he hadn't re-signed yet. But Morrissey of the Winnipeg Jets, you know, he was a really good, not like elite offensive defenseman, but he was a really good offensive defenseman before he came to the NHL. And it is not unusual for defensemen to take a couple of seasons to find their offensive game, especially since, hey, I'm a defenseman. Defense is first. Let me concentrate on that and nail that down my first couple of seasons before I sort of open up my game. I expect that from Morrissey. 20 points his first season, 26 points last year. I expect him to be around the 35-point range, but he's also a guy who's going to give you better numbers in hits and blocks. So, again, if he doesn't realize himself in the offense, I think you still have that to fall back on. He's averaging 125, 130, both hits and blocks. And there aren't too many defensemen who give you both of those categories at that level. And as I've said on a number of occasions, you know, if you're just looking at numbers, a defenseman who gives you at least a hit and a half or a block and a half per game on average is what you're looking for in terms of top 20 at the end of the season, looking at their numbers. That's where they're going to end up. So he's got those numbers there for you. I think he's going to bloom a little bit offensively. So I really like him in particular. T.J. Brody, sort of a forgotten guy. He sort of declined a little bit last year in particular, but he's going to be back up playing with Giordano, playing his offside, which is actually where he had his two best seasons, George. And again, looking at a guy who's going to be your fourth defenseman, I think he's going to push the 40-point mark again. He is one of the sort of a top 10 guys, or at least pushing the top 10 in blocks. He really doesn't give you much in hits at all, but he is definitely he's a guy who's averaged over 130 blocks per game the last 3 or 4 years as well. Montour for the Anaheim Ducks. I think he could be a breakout player this year. He got plenty of second unit power play time and put up some nice numbers. I think he's going to really push for number one power play time this year. But even if he doesn't get it, I still think he's going to put up really good numbers offensively. And I don't know if he's quite the sleeper, because I think people started noticing him a little bit last year, but Pulock for the Islanders I find intriguing again, especially if Trost is going to, and I'm not convinced Trost is going to necessarily take the reins off because he is more of a defensive coach, but if he does give him more of a legitimate opportunity to be the number one power play defenseman, which is by no means a sure thing, I find him intriguing. And again, even if he doesn't, I think he's going to be putting up some solid offensive numbers this year as well. Plus minus might be an absolute killer. So if it's that category in your league, you might want to shy away from that, factor that into whether you're going to take a chance on him or not. All right, George. Well, quite frankly, and again, this could just be naive of me, George, I thought we were going to be around 45 minutes today, covering everything I had listed, which we obviously have not gotten to. So I'm going to call it for today, because that's more than enough, and we'll pick up this conversation. We're not going to so much talk about goalie keepers or sleepers, I should say, because I don't really think that's a thing for goalies. But I am going to talk a little bit with you, George, about the back end of the top 10, the player goalies that third goalie that you're going to draft, assuming you're not, like, backing up your number one with your third goalie selection or something like that. Some of those guys, if there are any of those guys who sort of fit in the, okay, I'll take a chance because I think he might have some nice upside kind of thing. So we'll talk about that on Friday's show. And then we'll talk a little bit about, like, maybe players to avoid, the players that fall in that category who maybe me and you think they might get plucked in the fourth or fifth round, where we're like, okay, ninth round, I get it. Fourth round, fifth round, you're crazy. Okay, that's exaggerating a little bit. But, you know, that sort of thing. Or players that we are saying, you know, hey, target them in the 14th round or at least later in your draft. Again, because I agree with George that we don't want to be specifying where players are going to be drafted for all the reasons George repeatedly tells us. But just those players that we're worried about that they might get overhyped and drafted too high. So we'll talk about that and more on Friday's show. George, I'll let you go as I just remind everybody once again of our recent schedule. If you are looking to listen to our position-by-position fantasy breakdowns and only joining us now, we started them on September 3rd with top 24 goalies. It was top 20-plus. For goalies, if I'm being totally accurate. For centers, we did a top 40 on the 6th of September. On the 7th, we did top 25-plus left wings. Top 25 right wings we did on the 10th. We just did top 25-plus defensemen on Friday's show, and, of course, sleepers and keepers today. So you might want to check all of that out as well. And then we did team-by-team looks and breakdowns all through August, looking at their offseason, sort of doing a little bit of a mini preview to their upcoming season, as well as talking fantasy value for each and every individual team. So in terms of a hockey warm-up to get yourself ready for the hockey season, as well as for your fantasy owners to prep for your hockey season and your hockey draft, this is sort of the perfect primer for both things. Stay with us all year long for all your hockey needs, whether it's fantasy or on ice. Have a good hockey week, everybody. We'll talk to you on Friday.